Blog Talk Radio.
Another edition of Frat House Sports' Cleanup Hitters. Frat House Mike Gurry from the Frat House. April 22nd, coming to you here on a Wednesday evening. And I'll throw out the apologies right here and now, second week in a row. I know we're off schedule. And I can't even blame BTR for it this week. Wish I could. I can't. It's all my fault. Seriously. I will take calls tonight from people who are suffering from seasonal allergies just about as badly as I am. Honest to gosh, I have never had seasonal allergies quite as bad as I have had so far this year. I'm not joking, folks. I'm on 3 medications prescribed by my doctor. Not even over-the-counter stuff. It's prescribed. Nuts. It's put me in a bubble, seriously. But no, in the past couple of days, it's been a little bit difficult, and seriously, I couldn't talk for a couple of days, so it was kind of tough to actually get on here and say, yeah, let's do a program, so I had to postpone it. So it's my fault, but I'm certainly hoping that by next week we're going to get things back on track here, and we will be coming to you at our regular time on Tuesday evening, and we'll have our full cadre of co-hosts with us as we should. But see, unfortunately, I had to move things around tonight, and, well, yes, we've got Nick with us. Nick, how are we doing tonight?
Doing great. Fred, how's Mike? How you doing?
Well, better. Better now than I was, I guess, a couple of days ago, for sure. It's been a couple of rough days, but, you know, we should have had, I think we were supposed to have Caleb here this evening, on Tuesday, actually, had we run it last night, and unfortunately, Caleb can't be here on Wednesday. So we got to get the program back to its regular time, but that's not going to stop us, nonetheless, from being able to bring in some terrific guests this evening, and we've got a couple of them that are going to be joining us. First of all, we'll have Brandon Warren coming to us from Minneapolis, Minnesota, to talk a little Twins baseball. Actually, looking at the standings, I don't know, Nick, it would seem to me we might be commiserating more than chatting, huh? I mean, Minnesota Twins are just about as bad as the Philadelphia Phils.
Yeah, they're not looking too great right now. To say everything they can go wrong is going wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Not promising. Yeah,
heck of a way for Paul Molitor to talk about a baptism of fire. I really like Paul Molitor. I always liked Paul Molitor. I liked Paul Molitor a lot when he was playing it. Well, we were going to talk to Brandon Warren, and we're going to find out what it's like for him up there. As I think they go into their 5th year of rebuilding. 5th straight year for the Minnesota Twins of rebuilding. The last time that they had a winning season, I believe, was 5 seasons ago. But anyhow, we're going to be talking with him, and he'll be coming to us at about 7:15 or so, so that should be a lot of fun. And then I guess just past the half-hour mark or so, I guess about 7:40 or so, we'll be joined by John Blaine, who's a sports writer for The Inscriber digital magazine, covering, I have a feeling he covers a little bit of everything, but I have a feeling his specialty are going to be talking some of those New York baseball teams. And gosh knows there is quite a bit to talk about with the New York teams. Now, what else can we do? Well, hey, you all could help me out tremendously. It would take a little bit of stress off of my voice, which I've just gotten back today, by giving us a call and giving us your thoughts on whatever might be on your mind with regard to baseball. 347-826-9964. That's how you can jump in with us here at Frat House Sports. 347-826-9964. Whether you are listening, you know, if you've got a cell phone there or landline, whatever, just pick it up. 347-826-9964. If you are listening via a computer and are Skype capable, just hit the Skype button. Put you through to us loud and clear. Chat room wide open. I see we've got some folks in there. Thank you. And or you can hit me up over on Twitter at Frat House Mike. All right. So I guess, well, you know, before we get Brandon in here to talk a little bit about the Minnesota Twins, Nick, we gotta, you know, and we're going to be talking New York baseball a little bit later again in depth with our buddy John Blaine. But what in the world do you make of these New York Mets? 9 games in a row, 9-1 in their last 10. They're now 11-3 in the East, 2.5 games up on Atlanta, and they have the best winning percentage of any team right now in baseball.
I make that it's early and not. it's an impressive win streak, but you look at who they beat in the process. It was 3 games against the Phillies, 4 games against the Marlins, 2 games against the Braves, total to their 9 wins. It's difficult to win 9 games in a row against any team. I mean, you could play the Phillies or the Twins or the Diamondbacks 9 times in a row, and it's unlikely you win 9 times, even if you're the Kansas City Royals or the Detroit Tigers. But if you also look statistically, both as a team and individually, you can't expect everything that's going right to go right for the entire season all at once. It seems like everybody on the team is having a really, really hot streak right now all at the same time. And when that happens, yeah, you're going to be dominant, but you can't expect that to carry out, you know, for 162 games. So obviously they're not going to win the next 20 as well. They might win a few more. And I think the franchise record is 11, I read somewhere. But you look at this and you say, okay, when's the next time this season, though, that they're going to have even 4 of these players have the type of streak that they're having? So it's an impressive start, and it's always good to get out to an early lead and get out to a hot start and get that jump start. It gives you more room for error down the road. But I'm not ready to quite buy into the Mets yet. They've got series again. They're in a series right now with the Braves. Mm-hmm. That's a home series. And then they've got the Yankees coming up in New York, the Marlins, but then they play the Nationals. They did beat the Nationals in the first series between the two, 2-1. But it'll be interesting to see how they play out the rest of this month and how they start the month of May. And if they don't have to win every game from here on out, but if they can win, they've got, let's see, 9 games left in April, including tonight. I think if they can win 6 of those, then I start to give them some more thought. But if they go below 500, then I think it was just a really, really hot start for the Mets.
Well, nice analysis. What did you say their record for wins in a row is 11? Is that what you said?
I think so. I can double check.
Yeah, right. Okay, I got you. I mean, they're close to that, and that's doable. They've already won their first game, I guess. Was last night their first game against Atlanta?
Yes.
And so, I mean, that's a doable situation. Although, I mean, Atlanta, I mean, right now they're okay. I mean, they're 8-5. It seems to me, based on the schedule that you just cited there from the Mets, they've got themselves a heavy dose of the NL East there early in the season, don't they?
Yeah, I mean,
it seems a little bit lopsided almost.
Yeah, you look, they opened up against the Cardinals and they had the Rangers, but then they played National, Braves, Phillies, Marlins, Braves, Yankees, Marlins, Nationals.
Yeah, that's heavy. That's heavy with the NL East early on in the season.
And you wonder if that's advantageous or disadvantageous in that later in the season they won't have as many games to make up ground or to put themselves away from the rest, or it's advantageous they get it all out of the way now and they don't have to worry about it later. I don't really know. I've never really noticed historically if that really works out for teams or does not. But have you ever noticed when teams play a lot of division opponents early, if it kind of works out or doesn't work out, it really has an effect?
I can't say that I can statistically point to anything, but, you know, you make a valid point that, you know, frequently we know that as we get later into the season, and I'm thinking, when we get into, say, September, you know, from about the beginning of September on, a lot of times the schedules are heavily weighted with teams in your own division. And if suddenly, you know, if we're seeing a team like the Mets right now having so many of them knocked out of the way early on, they're not going to have near as many. You would think that that actually would be a benefit to them, you would think. But I guess we'll wait and see. One thing I can say that I have seen in the past, and I just wanted to bring this one up, I know that particularly in the years when the Phils were quite good, it wasn't all that long ago, actually, I'm thinking in the terms of the years of like 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, when you go back and take a look at the seasons where the Phils had really, really good Aprils, those were the seasons that they seemed to dominate throughout the entire season. Where they had, say, a 500 or less than 500 April, it usually was an indicator that they weren't going to have a very good season. So I would say that for the Mets to get out to an early, you know, jump like this, while obviously, as you point out, it is early. I mean, we're 14 games into the season, and it's a 162-game schedule. While it is early, I have historically found that an early jump like this can be quite beneficial. Just an observation there. But now, let's flip it for a moment and stay in the NL East, because one of the teams that we talked about, particularly in preseason right here on our cleanup hitters program, and I think it was the week that we were looking at the NL East, a team that a lot of us were thinking was probably going to have a slightly better season, were the Miami Marlins, who have the exact opposite schedule record right now that the New York Mets do. They're 3-11. And I'm sitting there going, wow, this is a team that a couple of folks, analysts, right here on our own panel, thought, they might be a little bit better. Now they're actually saying that Mike Redmond might be the first one fired. He might be on the hot seat and could be gone by as early as May if things don't get turned around in Miami. What in the world is going on with Miami, Nick?
I got to be honest. I haven't been able to watch them for enough of their 14 games to really point to one or two specific things, but the fact of the matter is they are 3-11, and this is a team that in a division that's considered weak outside of Washington is in last place behind the Phillies. Also interesting that Washington's in third place. I know it's early, but they're 3-11, and they're supposed to be at this point in the season. It is early, but we're now 14 games in. At this point in the season, at least in contention for first place, even if it's within 3-4 games, but they're 8 games back, and we're only 14 games in. That's almost difficult to do. I mean, you gotta really try. Despite the Mets record, generally speaking, you have to try really, really hard to be 8 games behind them. Honestly, I think Mike Redmond should be on the hot seat right now, and it's very rare to hear this early in the season that a manager's on the hot seat, because, you know, the most cliche saying in baseball is it's a marathon, it's a long season, you got 162 games, and you do, but it's got to turn around quick, because this is a division that's already getting away from them, and not that their goal is to win the division this year, or it should be, but not that's not the end-all be-all. The end-all be-all for the Marlins is to be in contention, to prove that they're an up-and-coming competitive team, that they just spent $325 million on Giancarlo Stanton because they know they can build around him and because they know they're going to be good in the future. And so far, it looks like they've taken a step back. So if I'm in the Marlins front office and at the end of April, we're 10 games back, we're still 10 games under 500, I cut my losses. I don't wait around and sit and say, oh, you know, they all got to come together. Players got to get healthy. You got to wait for people to heat up. He's got this. No, I say you've got, what now, 10 days left, 9 days left to turn this around? If not, then you're gone.
Wow. I made a point the other day. Somebody was talking to me. I forget who. Somebody here actually at the frat house was bringing up the NL East, and I said the division is a division that I think is going to be won by attrition, because I see so many of the teams just kind of falling away and whoever is going to be up at the top with a winning record is going to be the winner of this division. That's the way it's going to go. Because, I mean, frankly, we didn't expect that the Mets would be 11-3 at this point. We didn't expect, I don't think, the Miami Marlins to be 3-11. The Phils are kind of where we expected the Phils to be. It's early. That's the bottom line. It is early. So I guess we'll see how it's going to go from here at this point. Let me get in our guest, because I see we've got Brandon Warren on the line with us. So let me get Brandon in here. And okay, there we go. As I pointed out, we've got Brandon Warren here, who is a sports writer for Sports Data LLC, coming to us from Minneapolis. Brandon, is that where you're coming from?
Yep, you got it. That's exactly where I'm at.
Now, tell our audience, if I could, please, you're a sports writer for Sports Data LLC. I'm not sure. What is Sports Data LLC, and how can we follow what you're writing?
Well, we just recently rebranded as Sport Radar, and all the stuff that I write for that company comes up on NCAA.com for basketball and football previews and recaps. So now that we're in the off season, my writing is more focused on Fangraphs.com, doing fantasy baseball stuff, and for a radio station here in town called 105 The Ticket, where I'm doing Twins beat reporting. So lots of writing going on right now.
You've also been a contributor, I think, too, as well, to what? KTWN 96.3 FM, is that right? Minnesota? That's the Twins flagship program station, is it not?
Yeah, owned by the same people that own the ball club. So I'm on there Sunday mornings on a radio program there, too. So, yeah, a little bit all over the map.
You've been following the Twins now and kind of a beat writer for them for how long?
This is my second season doing it. I did it in 2013 as well and then had a year off. But this is year number two where I'm following them pretty much full time.
I was joking with Nick. Both Nick and I, well, we don't make qualms about it. We broadcast here from the suburbs of Philadelphia. And Nick and I are both, as it turns out, Philadelphia Phils fans, obviously. And I was joking with him at the top of the program before I brought you on here that we were going to be talking to somebody about the Minnesota Twins. I said, well, actually, it might be more like commiserating.
Talk
to us about what it's like to be a Twins fan. You're right now in the fifth year. Well, I guess of what could be called, what, a slow rebuild?
Yeah, I mean, the slowest possible rebuild. But, I mean, they've nailed their draft picks the last couple of years, and the hope is that it'll, you know, start figuring itself out here soon. But it's been an arduous process, and fans are starting to get restless.
That's got me curious. Because, and with due respect, I got to be honest, we don't get a chance here in the Philadelphia market to see many Minnesota Twins games. I would imagine most people around the country don't get a chance to see that many Minnesota Twins games. So it's difficult to gauge what the fan base is all about there. But I know a little bit about, I guess, the middle of the country region, having been out to places like St. Louis and what have you, and I find that, for the most part, fan bases out in that neck of the wood have a tendency to be a bit more, well, what's the word I want? Patient? Would that be appropriate?
Yeah, devoted, I would say, would be a good way. It's a live and die with the team kind of mentality, but not exactly the East Coast sort of thing where it's, you know, spend, and you got to win the World Series every year. It's a disappointment. But at the same time, yeah, it's been tough on the fans. They've been really disappointed with the last 4 years plus.
Yeah. Now, you know, one of the things that we went into it, the Philadelphia Phils fans here, we went into our season pretty much knowing that, well, let's get it straight. Our team's going to suck. We knew that. But it was funny because I brought up right here on this radio program just, I guess, excuse me, a week ago, 2 weeks ago. Excuse me. At the beginning of a season, it always seems that hope springs eternal. You sit there regardless of whether you actually, you know, you might know it in your head. Well, you don't expect too much. But somehow or another, you kind of let things get away from you a little bit and go, well, maybe, just maybe. As a sports writer who has to follow a team that you might go into a season knowing, I don't know what to expect. I don't think it's going to be very good. How difficult is that to do every night?
Well, it's not. I mean, it's just what you do. It's not terribly difficult, but at the same time, there can be a lot of kickback on Twitter and all the interactions that you do with the fans, because the fans are obviously going to expect good things. And if one player is young and good, then he can only get better as he gets older, when that's just not the case. You know, some guys regress. Some guys just don't get better. Some guys peak at 22, 23, 24. And so you've got to be able to moderate between the people with the rose-tinted glasses and the ones that rip everything the team does. And you got to kind of stay on an even keel. But at the same time, you don't get too wrapped up in the performance of the team, because your job is your job, and you cover the team, win, lose, or draw. So it's a balancing act, but it's one that I definitely enjoy.
The Twins were, I mean, when you started off the season this year, you weren't exactly dealt the greatest hand when it came to, I guess, your starting of your schedule. They ended up having to play the 6-0 Tigers at one point, and then I think turned right around from that and played the 7-0 Royals at the time. And I think somewhere in there, I remember looking up, I guess it was last week, the Twins were like 1-6 or something, or worse than that, 1-8 or something. And I mean, I guess recently I'm looking down, they're 5-9. I guess they've rebounded a little bit at this point. What's the anticipation for what the end record will be at this point?
Well, I think the goal before the Irvin Santana situation played out was that, you know, maybe they'll be 75, 78 wins, threaten 500 if everything breaks right, and the offense doesn't regress too far from being fifth in the American League run score last year. But when you drop down such a crushing decision with the steroid suspension or the ganazolol suspension for Santana, that shakes everything up, because you get guys moving from spots where they were comfortable and they were expected to fill in into spots that they're just, you know, they're not quite as prepared to fill. So, you know, bringing Mike Pelfrey into a rotation in the place of Irvin Santana is obviously a huge fallback. And so now,
right,
you know, there's that risk of losing 90 games again for the fifth straight year, which would be extremely, extremely disappointing, especially now because they don't have any of the kids up right now, which is a source of frustration for a lot of people too. But hopefully the first half will be the downswing and the second half will be the upswing. And that's in exact contrast to the last 4 years. If they can move forward in the second half and do good things there, it bodes well for 2016 and moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Brandon, this is Nick. Just while we're on the topic of Irvin Santana, what's the reaction in Minnesota when the news broke? Because usually when news breaks about a player like this, there's two reactions. There's, I don't care, he's ours, we still love him. And then the second option is, he's a cheater and we want to run him out of town. Santana seems to be kind of a good guy, somebody that nobody really has much beef with. He's got a love for the game. But then news like this breaks about him. What was the reaction in town?
The trouble is the he's ours aspect doesn't really apply, considering he hasn't pitched for the Twins yet. He only pitched in spring training and he looked fine there. But there hasn't really been the he's ours, we still love him respect that he maybe would have garnered if it was in Kansas City or Atlanta or the Angels before that. Now, the more intelligent fan reaction has been disappointment. Why, you know, why did he use? Why did he get caught? What all was going on here? And what, you know, just wanting to know the facts. You know, the more lower-end fan, the one that just wants to be angry all the time or happy all the time based on results, basically is blaming the GM for signing a guy who was using steroids and asking why they didn't test him for those when, you know, that's against the rules. So it's a really weird vibe. I think fans were really excited about Santana just because he brings something to this rotation that the Twins didn't have. You know, a guy with a little bit more stuff, a little bit of strikeout potential. But at the same time, everybody's just sick of Mike Pelfrey, too. So it's kind of a double whammy in that respect for the front office. And then they're just kind of throwing their hands up like, well, what did you expect us to do? You know, we didn't know a guy who'd been in the big leagues for 7 or 8 years was using, and we had no reason to expect that. And so it's just, you know, it's just bad luck. That's just the way it is.
Since Nick brought up the Santana situation, let me just talk generally, if I can, about the and help me out on the pronunciation. Santazolo, is that, am I pronouncing that correctly?
I think it's Santazolo.
Okay. I like it. I like the way you said it. Very good. Whether it's right or wrong.
I hope it's right. I hope it's right.
One of the things that's come to light here, bit of an anomaly, maybe a bit of a mystery. we've seen four pitchers, all pitchers too, suspended for the use of this year. Major League Baseball has got their antenna up. They're going, we thought this was a banned substance that has long been gone. This is not, I guess, the kind of this is not the kind of performance enhancement drug that I think we've become used to, a la the Biogenesis scandal. This is, goes back to more the old kind of anabolic steroid, is it not?
Yeah, it's a really weird vibe because, you know, it's pitchers. They have a lot of common threads because, you know, but in terms of ethnicity too, you know, where they come from in the world has been similar because, you know, Arlotus Vizcaino and Irvin Santana and the other ones whose names escape me right now. I mean, I think they're all from pretty much the same area of the world. And the weird thing is about Santa Zolal, yeah, it's more of a, you know, a Jose Canseco era or before kind of deal with steroids. You know, it's not, you'd think guys would be taking designer drugs if they wanted to, you know, mask it. It's just, it's almost unconscionable that they would take something that blatantly obvious to be caught. So you wonder if there's some level of deception in there in how they were prescribed it or given it. But it just, a lot of things don't really add up in the situation, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of talk that perhaps maybe this has been, I don't know, snuck into some supplements that some of these guys are using. You know, I've heard the old adage that, you know, well, ignorance of the rules is no defense. You know, apparently Major League Baseball puts out a list of supplements that are suitable for use, and if you're not using those, well, then shame on you. But I don't know. It seems to me that when Major League Baseball themselves are sending out the, I guess, kind of alarm that, we're kind of head-scratching over here ourselves. We're not quite sure why and what and how and where. And, you know, you got to wonder whether there's really anything to this one, unlike some others that we've seen in the past.
For me, it just boils down to, I wonder if Santana's healthy, because a lot of these guys take these drugs to rebuild muscle tissue or to get healthy. And if there was any reason to believe he wasn't healthy, you know, he scrapped the slider in September with the Braves, threw it a lot less. That's a pitch that's obviously high torque on the right elbow. If he wasn't feeling right and he needed to justify getting the contract, I don't know. There's a lot of moving pieces and a lot of moving parts in place right now that we won't know the answers for a very long time, if ever.
Mm-hmm. All right. Real quick, before I let you go here, just let me get your opinion on the whole pace of play situation. I've been watching a lot of baseball, obviously, this season. I'm probably watching more than I have in quite a few seasons. The pace of play seems to be working. In fact, I think one of the recent reports that I read indicated that on the average, about 7 to 8 minutes has actually been shaved off of the average game right now that's already been played in Major League Baseball. I frankly think, as much as I was kind of incredulous walking in on this one, I kind of think it's working. What are your thoughts as a writer and as somebody who watches the game all the time?
Well, I ran the numbers for the Twins through 12 games, and they had actually shaved 15 minutes off. Which was surprising, yeah. I mean, really surprising. And the biggest thing for me was, I always worry about changes in rules being meddlesome and being, you know, messing with the game for no good reason. But through now, I believe, you know, 14 games for the Twins, I haven't noticed any negative effects. And if it brings a new era of fans, whether it's people that don't already root for baseball and don't root for anything, or people who are upset with the NFL, with the concussions and violence thing, whatever it does, if it can bring in a new era of baseball fan, whether it's, you know, from different backgrounds, or if it's different ages, whatever it takes, if it improves the quality of the fan bases for each of these teams, I got no problem with it, because it's sort of like, if you have a plan in place to improve something for people that are incoming, but you do it at the expense of the people who already exist, you know, that's not good. It's like if you live in an apartment and they let people move in for cheaper than the people who live there already. Like, that was a worry for me, that it was going to cheapen the game and, you know, make it into some kind of weird sideshow act with a clock. But honestly, I can't say that I've seen any negative effects, and I'm kind of a baseball lifer, so I've been very impressed with how it's been integrated.
Yep, absolutely. And just one more last thing. I'm just sitting here, I'm looking over stats from the from your Twins team there. I'm looking over the pitch. Yeah, well, I'm looking over the pitching stats mostly here. The hitting stats, I'll just leave those alone because holy smokes.
No, they're bad too.
I can't. Just looking at the pitching stats real quick. Boy, oh boy, that your starting lineup. Everybody must cringe. But talk to me real quick about Thompson, Aaron Thompson. Obviously, he's. I'm not certain, but I'm suspecting he's one of your five starters, right?
No, he's working out of the bullpen.
Oh my God, he's pitched more innings than who's your fifth starter? Pelfrey.
Well, Pelfrey is in there right now. It's kind of in flux because
of Santana.
Ricky Nolasco is and Nolasco is put on the disabled list too.
Okay,
so the five starters right now are Hughes, Gibson, Trevor May, Mike Pelfrey, and Tommy Malone. Not necessarily in that order. I would say the fifth starter is Pelfrey right now. But yeah, it's a very fluid situation because of Nolasco going on a rehab this weekend, and hopefully Alex Meyer pitching well enough in AAA to make his way up. He pitched really well yesterday. But Thompson's worked out of the pen. He's kind of been soaking it up out of that bullpen, and he's done a nice job. And not many strikeouts, but he's looked good in a mop-up role.
Could he start?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think his thing is he just kind of is a lefty that swings sliders about 55% of the time, and you know, he keeps guys off balance, but I think if you let him get teen more than once, he'd get exposed pretty quick because he only throws about 88 miles an hour.
Yeah, I got you. I'm just looking at that ERA. That's pretty impressive.
He's been really good.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive, but I got you. All right. Go ahead, Nick.
I just got one more question for you there, Brandon.
Sure.
With Minnesota's obviously struggling, if this continues, they've got prospects, Tano, Meyer, Buxton, Berríos, Polanco. I mean, they got a lot of guys sitting there in the minors waiting to come up. Do you think that this is a year where we'll see a lot of those young guys come up and maybe see what they've got? And if so, how far into the season do you see us being before that happens?
Well, for every position, it's different just based on who's in front of them. Like, for instance, in front of Miguel Sano, there's Trevor Plouffe, who's a very good, not right now so far how he's playing, but, a nice everyday big league player. So, it might slow him down a little bit, but not much because they can move him around. With Buxton, too, and both Sano and Buxton are off to really slow starts at AA, so that's another part of it, too. But you could see guys like Aaron Hicks, Josmel Pinto, and Eddie Rosario here in the next few weeks or maybe a month. And then as you get into the midsummer around the All-Star break is when you might start seeing Buxton and Sano. And in Meyer, it's really hard to tell because their rotation is so full right now. Even if it isn't with quality, it's with quantity. And I think Berríos is on the same kind of deal, too. So I think any of those guys that you listed, including Polanco, if they believe he can play a little shortstop, they're all fodder for call-up at some point this year. This roster could look drastically different 2 weeks from now, 2 months from now, or at the end of the year, and we're just kind of sitting here waiting to see when all that's going to happen.
All right, very good. We've been talking with Brandon Warren from, your website, please, Brandon.
My personal website is brandonwarren.com, but I'm with 105 The Ticket's Cold Omaha, and then Sport Radar in Minneapolis is my day job. So I'm writing all over the place.
Yeah, man, really. Go
96.3.
What's the easiest way, I guess, maybe to catch up with you? Give us your Twitter account and all that other kind of stuff. But what's the easiest way? If somebody wants to see everything that Brandon Warren is writing, where's the best place to go?
At Brandon @WARNE. That's the way to do it.
There you go. Brandon, thanks for joining us. Do me a favor, please make sure that you let Paul Molitor over there, who I have, he has been a hero of mine for many, many years. Let him know that I am rooting for him this year, for sure.
You got it. He's a great guy.
We want to get you back in at some point during the season, and I'll reach out to you at some point in the future, Brandon. Thanks a lot.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
You got it. All right. Very good. Brandon Warren there. Minnesota Twins. I don't know. What can you say? It's a tough situation there, Nick. I guess it would be like, it's funny because I got – Before we went to air tonight, I'm trying to think who it was. Do I have his specs? I got an email, and this happens frequently. Oh, okay, yeah, gentleman's out in Los Angeles. I got an invite from a radio program out in Los Angeles, and they said, "Hey, Frat House Mike, would you, you know, we'd like to have you on the air on one of our programs at some point." And I got back to him. I said, "Absolutely," and I'm sitting there. And I'm thinking to myself, Lord Almighty, you know, I hope they're going to talk. I hope they want to talk the Eagles, because if they're going to talk the Phils, I guess I'm going to sound like Brandon. It's just all going to be doom and gloom, you know.
it's painful, yeah. Really. It really is painful to watch this, and you know, I'm 19, so when I started watching baseball, they were not quite in their dynasty years yet, but not far from it. You know, I remember like Jim Tomei days, but my first real memories of watching this team, 2007 win the division, 2008 win the World Series, and they're in the NLCS the next year. They've got kind of this dynasty going on, and now they aren't good again. And my dad would always tell me during the dynasty years, you know, you don't know how lucky you are that you're 15 years old and you've seen a World Series. You know, my dad turned 50 this year. I'm 50, and I've spent 45 of those years watching this team suck. And it's not until this team really does suck that you really truly appreciate what we once had. And you realize that, yeah, maybe a lot of these young Phillies fans did take it for granted, but geez, I'm sitting here hoping they get out of this in 3 years. I can't even imagine another 20, 25 years of this, if that's what it's going to be, if we're really back in the old days.
My eldest daughter, who is 20, I think she's 26, remembers when I had partial season tickets to the Phils. I had the Sunday season ticket plan for the Phils back at the old Vet Stadium. I think it was 1995, 96, and 97. And I would take her and her brother down to the games. They were absolutely horrible at that time. Now, that was the post 93 Phils that went to the World Series with, you know, that was the post Kruk, post Dalton, you know, who else was on that? Morandini, you know, Lieberthal, you know, that was all that, you know, we were starting to see that team really begin to break down. And we went for three seasons. And she remembers going down to the games fondly, she does. Of course, she was a youngster, and, you know, just kind of, we all just enjoyed the concept of just going to the ballpark, if you understand what I'm saying. I mean, that's really why you went, was it was something fun to do on a Sunday. But, I mean, I'm just trying to think, I mean, if I'm going to go on to this, if I'm going to end up on this radio program out in Los Angeles, what I could possibly share with that team, with that program, with regard to you know, the Philadelphia Phils. Real quick too, before, because we're going to have John Blaine joining us shortly here from the Inscriber Digital Magazine, and we'll be talking a whole bunch of different things with John here in a couple of moments. Wanted to get your thoughts real quick though, talking about the Phils, Nick. On, you know, we just got done talking about the fact that Mike Redman from the Miami Marlins might in fact turn out to be one of the first managers that we could see actually let go from their position, and it could be fairly early if the Marlins don't actually get things turned around. In the same breath, we've also heard a bit about Ryan Sandberg. You know, in fact, I think there are actually betting lines in Las Vegas on when it might be that Ryan Sandberg might actually get the boot. Somewhere along the line, I got to be honest, and I'm not saying I'm a big Ryan Sandberg fan or not, although, I mean, I loved him when he played the game there with the Cubs and always felt that the Phils made one of the greatest, absolutely ridiculous blunders in their life, trading the guy away. But with the Phils knowing that they're going to go into a season like this one, it being as well known as it has been, and even, I think, admittedly, from the standpoint of the management of the team, Would it be fair to go and dump, say, Ryan Sandberg, say, come the end of May or the beginning of June? Would that be fair under the circumstances where the team knows going into the season that they're just not going to be good? We have heard management say this is not going to be a good team.
Yeah, I think it would be fair. I think the criteria, though, should not be the Phillies' record because, I mean, like you said, we understand the Phillies aren't going to be good. And no matter who you hire as a manager, you could bring back Connie Mack. You could bring in, Joe Girardi. I'm sorry, not Joe Girardi, Joe Torre. You could bring in any manager you want, any successful manager you want, and this team's not going to be good. I mean, you can only do so much
right.
when you don't have any talent. I think if he goes, if we say that Sandberg deserves to go, it's not going to be because the Phillies aren't good. It's going to be because of the way he handled the team and the way the Phillies are looking down the road. I think I'm not a Sandberg fan. I'm not really against him, but I don't really think he's done a fantastic job with this team. I think there are problems elsewhere, though. Obviously, up in the front office with Ruben Amaro and surrounding Ruben Amaro, above and below. I think the scouting department is terrible from top to bottom. I think the farm director is, they used to have one of the best farm directors in the league. They got rid of him a couple years ago, and they brought in this new guy. His name's escaping me. Hasn't done as great of a job. So obviously, off the field, there's other things they need to improve, but I think it's very possible that come the end of May, beginning of June, we could say, yes, Sandberg does deserve to go. And it's not because the Phillies aren't good. It's because of the way he handles things. It's because we look at it and say, if the Phillies did have talent, he still wouldn't be doing a good job. We just don't believe he's a very good manager. I think it's very possible and somewhat likely that at least by the end of the year, Sandberg could be gone just because the front office doesn't like how he's handled the team from a purely acumen standpoint. That said, this front office has not exactly been known to pull the trigger as much recently on anything, and they haven't exactly been known to make the best decisions lately. So, honestly, whether or not he should go, I don't think he will, just because I think the front office will sit upstairs on their bums and say, we're not good, it's not Sandberg's fault, we don't really feel like looking for a new manager because it's not going to make a difference, we'll worry about that later, let's get some talent first. So it's possible that he deserves to go, but I see it as highly unlikely that he does before the end of the year.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I take a kind of a different approach to it, a different perspective. First of all, if the team itself is admittedly indicating we're not very good, I don't know how you can necessarily sit there and say, well, a management change will make the difference. Because, look, let's get it straight. I think we all know that the team is not performing not because of the manager, but because of the quality of the talent that's put on the field. That's number one. Number two, Ryan Sandberg was touted for many, many seasons as being one of the prize potential managers in Major League Baseball, at least with the Phillies organization. And so I don't know if it would be fair to assess him based on what this team is right now. But that's just where, I guess that's just my personal opinion on it. If anybody out there wants to jump in with us, please, and you got anything on your mind with regard to what we've talked about here, and we're going to be talking with John Blaine here momentarily. In fact, in like 10 seconds, I'm going to bring John in. Please don't hesitate to give us a call, 347-826-9964. We'd love to hear from you. We're talking everything and anything in the world of Major League Baseball. 347-826-9964. If you're listening on a computer via and you've got Skype, hey, hit us up there. Leave us a note in the chat room or hit me up over on Twitter at @FratHouseMike. All right. We got a doubleheader here tonight as we're going to bring in our second guest, and that's John Blaine, sports writer for the Inscriber Digital Magazine. John, how are we doing tonight? Thanks for joining us from Long Island, New York. How are things up there?
Not bad. A little bit rainy.
A little bit rainy got you. Yeah, we had it earlier today.
Yeah.
I got to ask you before we get into things here. Now, over at the Inscriber Magazine, what exactly are you covering for them, and what are you writing these days? Is it all baseball, or are you kind of bouncing around?
Basically, it's whatever they give me. Baseball is my favorite sport of all time, but I'm willing to write anything that they throw my way.
Gotcha. Now, with regard to baseball, because you're on Long Island, I'm making a guess here, but I could be completely wrong. See, I've trolled you, John, over on your Facebook page, and here's my problem. I see images from the Mets, and I see images from the Yankees. So you've got me confused, buddy. What are you, a Yankees or a Mets fan?
Well, here's the thing. This is actually an interesting background with it. My family's actually split with it. Half my family are Yankee fans. The other half are Mets fans.
Oh, my God. That must make for a great July 4th.
Oh, that makes for a great July 4th. That makes for a great time when they're in the Subway Series.
So where do you put yourself, or are you not willing to divulge that because of your writing that you have to do for Inscriber Magazine?
No, I'm more on the Yankee side of it right now, but don't get me wrong. The Mets are pretty impressive to start off this season.
Well, let's start it off right there, because Nick, who is one of my co-hosts here, who you'll be hearing from here momentarily, and I, we started off the evening tonight at this program talking about that very thing. And, well, obviously, Nick made the point, hey, let's hold our horses there. Hey, it's early. But gosh almighty, 9 games in a row is pretty darn impressive, particularly from a team I think that, well, some had maybe what? Maybe best, third in the division, maybe fourth in the division? Well, where in the world did this come from?
It's weird, though, because they're playing smart right now. They're getting timely hitting. They're also getting production from people you would not think they would have gotten production from Wilmer Flores, from this new kid, Kevin Pilecki, who they just called up yesterday because of the Darnell injury. They're getting timely hitting. The pitching, for some reason, is clicking in, but I did not have a problem with the Mets pitching. The only problem I did have with is Bartolo Colon, and the fact that he's 3-0 right now is kind of surprising to me. The pitching's clicking in. The bullpen, I'm still a little bit iffy about just because they have so many injuries in the back end of their bullpen. I'm still a little iffy about that, but the way they've been winning, where they're not winning games 4-3, they're winning games 8-1, 9-0.
Right.
I'm pretty happy with the way this team is playing right now.
One of the things Nick pointed out was, well, let's take a look at the schedule, huh? What credence do you give to the fact that, well, okay, hey, they've played a pretty NL East-heavy schedule where the competition hasn't been all that hot. Let's see where they stand when you get later on, say, into the mid-May, you know?
Yeah, that's my thing is, believe me, as somebody who lives in New York, I'm glad they're playing the way they are. But I'm not jumping on the bandwagon so quick as saying I think this team is going to be playoff time. But don't get me wrong. They definitely have the look, they have the shape to be a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just not that convinced that this team is really pushing it. Like your co-host said before, it's still way too early in the year. If all of a sudden they go on a tailspin, like they always do come the second half of the season, nobody's remember this winning streak that they were been on. It would become irrelevant. They have to
Right.
keep this going throughout the entire season.
Gotcha. All right, now let's shift it over real quick here to the Yankees for a moment. Because I think something else that surprised, well, and I got to be honest, it surprised me. Alex Rodriguez, 4 home runs, 11 RBIs. Now, these are numbers as of yesterday. So 4 home runs, 11 RBIs, .286 batting average, .412 on base percentage, .634 slugging. His numbers are right up there, you know, I think, within the top 10 across the American League. Is this an A-Rod that just has come out and he's just madder than hell and he's not going to take it anymore?
I don't think so. I think this is – obviously, he's 40 years old right now, so I think that's going to start playing into it. He's going to have to get time off eventually. It's bound to happen. But I don't think he's going to get time off yet just because, in fact, look at the Yankees – depth right now as far as backups go. Yeah, they have Chase Headley for third. Well, he's kind of the backup to Chase Headley, and he's kind of the backup to Mark Teixeira. So you know eventually they're going to have to take a break, and they're going to have to give him some actual field playing time. But he's going to get injured. He's 40 years old. But at this point, with the lack of offense that the Yankees team is having, I think the fact that he has numbers that he has, I think, are phenomenal. I mean, the fact that you look at this team right now, and like I said before with the Mets, how they're getting the timely hit in, the Yankees are getting it to an extent, but not as consistently as the Mets are. You have Brian McCann, who's hitting. You have Teixeira, who's hitting. Steven Drew, who's has a couple of nice moments here and there. And D.D. Gregorius, I don't know why the Yankees even picked him up in the first place, because he's really been god-awful these first nine games. So I'm glad that he's finally living up, so to speak, to his name, but I don't think this is going to last the entire season.
We had a long conversation last week. My co-host, one of my co-hosts last week, was a or is a Yankees writer for Baseball Hot Corner. Nick Swartz was on co-hosting with me last week. And he writes, he covers the Yankees. And one of the things we got into a conversation about was the fan, I guess, recognition of Alex Rodriguez. One of the things that Nick had pointed out to me, I guess, during preseason when the team was still down in Florida, was that the fan base down there, the Yankees fan base down in Florida that were showing up for some of the preseason exhibition games, were not terribly enamored with Alex Rodriguez. Now, suddenly, we're back in the confines of Yankee Stadium, and, well, that's kind of all changed. Is that the feeling up there? I mean, are people, like, welcoming this guy with open arms?
Yeah, because they look at it this way. He served his time. So I think they're trying to almost go at it as a forgive and forget type of thing. But don't get me wrong. If he starts sliding a little bit and his numbers start to dip, believe me, New Yorkers are not afraid to turn on somebody real quick. So right now, I would say, yeah, they're appreciating what he's doing right now with open arms, but the moment he slips and starts to go downhill and starts spending time on the DL, Yankee fans and baseball fans in general in New York are going to turn on him in the blink of an eye.
Now, one of the other exercises that we went through here in preseason on the program was that we took a look at each individual division in both the American League and the National League. And we kind of went down and we ranked where the teams would end up. Let me get your read on this real quick. Let's take a look real fast at the American League East. And for a moment, forget where the standings are right now. If today was the very beginning of the season, and like I said, just eliminate all that we know right now where things stand. Where did you have the American League East ending up at the end of the season, ranking them from top to bottom?
I would say, well, the first one is tough, though, because there's a couple of teams you can put in there. But I think at this point, obviously, when the preseason happened, I think I'd go Boston as first. But I would give Baltimore, I would give them a slight edge over Baltimore, and I'd give Baltimore two. I give the Yankees three, Toronto four, and Tampa five.
So that right now, that's exactly the way the American League East stands at the moment. Boston is up at the top. Baltimore and the Yankees and Toronto all tied with two games behind, and then Tampa Bay. Now, similarly, since you also have that kind of affinity to the Mets, where did you see the NL East?
I've said this for a while now. I think you're going to have Washington. Obviously, right now, they're kind of in a slide right now, but I think they're going to pick it up come early June. I have them finishing in first. I actually have the Mets finishing in second. I have Miami in third. I have Atlanta in fourth, and I have Philly in fifth.
I don't recall. Nick, how did you have that?
The NL East, I had Washington, Miami, New York, Atlanta, Philadelphia, I believe.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I've got it written down. They're in my notes. And I don't have those notes out with me, but I'll see if I can get those. But go ahead, Nick. You had a question there.
Yeah. Just real quick, allow me to jump back to Alex Rodriguez for a second there. Over the offseason and kind of really more towards the end of spring training, there was a lot of speculation that the Yankees were hesitant to play Alex Rodriguez a whole lot. At the time, he was six home runs away from Mays at 660, and there's a $6 million incentive for tying Willie Mays. He's now just two away. It seems kind of unavoidable, but The Yankees' payroll right now is around like $217 million. It's second in the league. They're paying $3 million to Martin Prado that's not on the roster. Have they kind of just completely thrown this aside? Have they just forgotten and kind of swallowed the fact that they're going to have to pay Rodriguez another $6 million, seeing as there's, what, 150 games left and 148 games left, and he needs two?
Yeah, I think they're going to have to, just because of the fact that they're not going to want to go through all the stuff they went through last year, or not last year, two seasons ago, when he wanted to sue the entire team. Don't get me wrong, the Yankees are not going to want to pay him, because I don't think they want to recognize, well, this guy just served the whole year for being suspended for steroids, but he tied with me, so we're going to pay him the extra incentive. I don't think the Yankees want to do that, but at this point, they're not going to really have a choice. Like you said, it's pretty much inevitable it's going to happen.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, seriously, they don't have a choice at this point. You know, it's one of the things I brought up on last week's program, that, you know, it's evident that they don't want to recognize it. They're not making a big to-do about it. But there's not a darn thing they can do about it at this point. The guy's under contract. So, you know, what would they'd be risking what? They'd be risking, I mean, if they don't, he could take them to court, could he not?
Oh, yeah, and at this point, I don't think after what happened 2 years ago when AI wanted to sue basically the entire Yankees team, including the medical doctors, I don't think the Yankees want to go through that again. So at this point, I think they're going to swallow their pride and just give him the money. Yeah, they're going to recognize it once he ties it, but I don't think it's going to be something that they're going to parade around about for that long.
All right. John, you okay with taking a call, I think, from a fellow Yankees fan?
Go right ahead.
Okay. I believe I've got Kevin on the line. Is that Kevin? Kevin, how you doing?
Yes, it is. How are you tonight?
Real good. I got John Blaine on the line here with us, who is a writer for the Inscriber Digital Magazine, and he covers the Yankees and the Mets and what have you. Go ahead. You got a question for him?
It's a pleasure, Mr. Blaine.
Thank you. Thanks.
I mean, I'm actually just chiming in, and I heard there's some A-Rod talk going on, and sounds
well,
like
I knew you'd be jumping in sooner or later there.
Sounds like the issue is him breaking Willie Mays' record, and, you know, we knew it was coming.
Yep.
And as I've stated in the past, you're not going to convince me that the Yankees didn't know when they signed A-Rod that he wasn't on steroids. You're not going to convince me that's not true. I mean, it goes both ways. They both signed the contract. Nobody put a gun in anybody's head. And it's a contract. They have to pay him. The league has reinstated him. He's paid his price.
Right.
And it's time to let it go.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty black and white. Right, John?
Yeah, at this point, there's no way the Yankees cannot avoid this because, like I said before, he's only two home runs away. If he was like 100 away, then I could see them possibly going a different route. But also, you got to understand something. For even if they wanted to say, okay, we're going to buy out the rest of your contract and we're going to let you go, there's no team in Major League Baseball that has enough salary room to pick up his contract, especially
right.
what he would be asking for.
Well, I was listening to Francesa the other day, and Francesa seems to think he's worth about 80 cents on the dollar right now. And if the Yankees were willing to pick up 20% of his contract, that they can move him. I don't
really? Really?
Yeah, I heard Mike Francesa say that, yeah. So.
Well, you know, please.
Maybe he's speaking hypothetically. I'm not sure.
That guy likes to hear himself talk. Come on.
Yeah, well, I love Francesa. I live in Dallas.
I figured as much, Eric Kevin. I figured.
I'm the big conspiracy theory guy. I know. I know. Hey,
well,
I
was just about to say, though, I mean, I don't know. You talk about trying to move A-Rod. I mean, John, talk to me here. Is there a team that would be... I guess there would be, huh? There'd be a team. There'd be teams out there that would be vying for
Miami.
Alex, Miami.
Yeah,
why not put him and the other guy in the same lineup? I don't know if they can afford him with that contract.
The thing, though, with, with A-Rod is there's only a few teams. I think Boston is one of them. The Mets could, if they actually had a payroll that was higher than $100 million, they possibly could go after him. But there's very few teams that even, A, that could financially, and B, that are willing to take on the headache that Alex Rodriguez brings.
Well, see, that's
why don't
now,
the Yankees just put A-Rod at third base and let him get hurt? If they really want him to get hurt, then put him at third base and let him get hurt.
Yeah, there's that option.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
I mean,
talk about conspiracy theories.
Well, no, I'm just saying, but a lot of people are saying that the Yankees want him to get hurt and not play, but they are caring for him. They're letting him DH. They're letting him play a little bit in the field. I actually kind of like his role. I was very upset when they signed Chase Headley. I was very upset because I couldn't wait to see A-Rod gloating at third base on opening day. I couldn't wait, and it didn't happen.
Well,
I find
the whole situation rather, I guess, fascinating and interesting because on one hand, you've got a team that is benefiting from him, obviously, by the numbers he's putting up right now, but it appears that they really don't want him, and yet it would be difficult to move him, so therefore they're contractually held to hold on to him. And yet you're saying there might be teams that would be interested, but, well, they don't want the baggage that goes with. Oh, my God almighty. I mean, seriously.
No, I didn't think any teams would be interested. I'm just telling you what I heard Mike Francesa say.
Well, no, I think John's saying the same thing. I think John said that there are teams that might be interested, but, well, maybe they don't want the baggage that goes with this guy.
Well,
Is that right, John?
I can tell you right now, he's not going to Boston.
Yeah, but that's the thing that bit me. I don't think he's going to go anywhere. I think he'll end up finishing up his career with the Yankees. But there are teams, believe me, if you get a team in July, let's say, before the trade deadline, that's a couple of games away and they're still in that playoff hunt, and all of a sudden Alex Rodriguez becomes available, you don't think there's always going to be that one team that's willing to take a bargain on him to bring him in if they can use him for a playoff run. I don't think it's going to happen. Because nobody's going to want him, but there's going to be a team out there who's desperate enough if they still have playoff hopes come middle of July.
You think the Yankees are going to completely collapse and want to give him up?
At this point, for the Yankees to do that, for that to happen, not only do I think they got to collapse, I think they got to go. Like I said before, I think Tampa Bay is going to finish in last places because I think they have no talent on that team. I think the only way the Yankees blow up this whole team and start from scratch is if they end up below Tampa Bay. Because then it really shows that this team did not do anything in the offseason.
You think the Yankees aren't molding, really?
No.
You don't think they have the talent? The way they've been pitching the last couple of games and they're leading the league in home runs?
Well, the problem is they have the talent, but the problem is it's not consistent.
Okay.
They're doing it, but like I was trying to say before, they're doing it. But like I said with the Mets, where they're doing it on a consistent basis, it feels like the Yankees aren't doing that.
Well, when the Yankees – now that A-Rod is anchoring the lineup at three, it doesn't seem like that presence has created some havoc in that lineup. I mean, I blame Joe Girardi for the lack of consistency. He jumbles the lineup every day.
But the other thing is you got to understand, as much as Yankee fans are loving this, that Alex Rodriguez is anchoring that lineup, you can't just rely on him to be the one to get the offense going. You have to have Teixeira, Stephen Drew, Didi Gregorius, all these guys, Ellsbury, Beltran, who have to start picking it up as well.
But they are contributing.
One of the things that we have talked about, one of the things we did talk about here on our preseason program with regard to the lineup, Yankees lineup in particular, is the age of this core. And that's been something that's been talked about with regard to the Yankees now, not just this season, but for at least the past, I guess, two or three seasons. And it's just getting older and older and older. While they might be playing well, I could see the team, I don't know if I would necessarily say, what was the term you just used, Kevin? I don't know
collapsing.
If I would necessarily collapsing. I don't know if I would use that. But I could see that as the season wears on, that's going to start showing on these guys. John, any thoughts?
Well, yeah, it's going to, just because, like you said, though, it's age is going to come into a factor, and you're going to have to give these guys time off. But the other problem is, where in the late 90s, the Yankees farm system was loaded with Jeter, with Posada, with these guys. The guys who are going to come up to the majors are not at that point yet. So you still have a couple of years till Gary Sanchez comes up, till these guys come up, and you're kind of in that window right now where it's like, okay, we want to give a guy like Beltran the day off. We want to give some of these guys a night off.
Give
well, you
Beltran
give like somebody like Teixeira the night off, well, his backup is Alex Rodriguez.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if you give Chase Headley the night off, his backup is Alex Rodriguez. You give Stephen Drew the night off, who's going to back him up? You see what I'm trying to – that's what I'm trying to get at, is this team bench-wise is not like it was 5-6 years ago.
I think John's point, Kevin
–
I think John's point, though, Kevin, is – I think the word he just used is consistency. And the question I would throw to you, Kevin, is, you know, you say about A-Rod being an anchor for this team. Do you see him being able to do that consistently?
Yes.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yes. He looks great. I mean, they look great right now. I mean, they're playing in 38-degree weather right now. I mean, and up in Detroit. But this team is better than I thought it would be. And I'm telling you, man, I can't disagree with you that the age factor could come into play, but there's
sure.
always the deadline. They could always bring a guy in. I mean, Chris Young's hitting. Drew's hitting. I have a feeling they might try to maybe dump Gregorius. I would put Drew at his natural position and reward him for hitting and bring a second baseman in. Maybe let Peralta play. Perella. Could you imagine Perella batting ninth and him reaping havoc in the back of the order the way he plays the game?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And I agree with you also, Kevin, about the thing with Didi Gregorius about getting rid of him. He has not performed to he's not the next Derek Jeter, don't get me wrong. He hasn't performed well enough that I still don't understand why the Yankees went out and got rid of Sean Green the way they did.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't believe much that I read. I mean, I kind of, like, try to watch and read between the lines. And I just think they had the opportunity to move him and get a shortstop. And a guy like Gregorius, who's humble and quiet and isn't flashy and wasn't going to get criticism for trying to, you know, be too much. I think they wanted that quiet, demeanored guy that wasn't going to get the Derek Jeter comparisons and all that. And but he stinks. I mean, he really stinks. And I'm pretty cool about letting players, his swing is way too long for a middle infielder, a guy that should be making contact, having productive outs and, you know, having and making the general plays in the field, too. The guy's terrible. Sorry. But he's not good.
All right. Well, listen, I got to wrap this one up. Kevin, thank you for jumping in with us tonight and giving
no
us
problem.
Your thoughts. As always, and I know that, you know, as soon as we bring up Alex Rodriguez, you will be on the line. And, well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
I think Joe Girardi's the guy that could keep these guys healthy. He's proven
right.
it.
All right.
And they
Thanks,
could bring
Kevin.
In reinforcements. And I disagree with the minor leagues. The guys in the minor leagues are ready. But respectfully,
right.
of course. Have a good
Real
night.
Real good. Thanks, Kevin. Kevin's always, I got to tell you, he can get a little crazy, but I love bringing Kevin on because he's certainly passionate and it's fun to bring him on and wind him up. You just wind Kevin up and you'll let him go.
Radio gold.
It truly is. You're not kidding. Real quick, John, I'm going to let you go. I had two real quick questions for you. One of the things I had asked our previous guest who we just had on from Minnesota, when we had Brandon Warren here from the Minnesota Twins, I want to ask you as well. Pace of play seems to be working. I was a little bit incredulous on the front end, but it looks to like it is actually working. I think one of the reports that I had read indicated on the average game so far that they've played, 7 to 8 minutes have been shaved off. Sounds like a good thing, yes?
Yeah, with me, I agree with you, though, Mike. In the beginning, I wasn't too thrilled about it, but as I've been watching it and the games are starting to become much quicker, I'm liking it now. My only thing, though, is the games could be quicker, but once you get Yankees-Boston, you're still going to pace the play, just be thrown out the window. Because Yankees-Boston will still play a 4 or 5 hour game.
Yeah, right. Okay, I got you. It's an anomaly all by itself. I got you.
Yeah.
And I want to get your opinion as well real quick before I let you out of here. Announcement came down, Fox Sports, I guess, is it Fox Sports 1 or just Fox Sports in general? Pete Rose will be joining them as an analyst. Is this signaling a new era for Pete Rose? Is this opening the door? Are we going to see Pete Rose? Is the band going to get dropped?
I realistically, I think so. And here's why. I think Rob Manfred wants to try to distinguish himself from Bud Selig and try to push himself into a new light. And I think one of the first things he can do is drop the ban on Pete Rose. I think realistically, I think it's going to come sooner rather than later. Just because, like you said, he just got hired at Fox Sports to be the analyst. It's bound to happen, and I hope it does soon because he's somebody who definitely should be in the Hall of Fame and should have been in the Hall of Fame 15 years ago.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You've been listening to John Blaine, sports writer for the Inscriber Digital Magazine. You can find that over at www.theinscribermag.com, or I guess just Google Inscriber Magazine, and you'll find it as well there. How else can our listeners catch up with you, John? Maybe
on Twitter at John_Blaine, and you can also hear me actually starting Monday.
I was going to say, I mean, our listeners might are going to be able to get a chance to hear a lot of John Blaine on a Monday program right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network.
Starting this Monday, and it's called Stitches.
There you go, Stitches. And we will be promoting that one, and everybody who is curious, what in the world is that all about? Well, what they got to do is get over to our Frat House Sports Facebook page, and we'll be releasing all kinds of information about that over the course of the next couple of days. John, welcome aboard. Thank you very much for joining us here tonight. And look forward to hearing the program next week.
Thanks.
You got it.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, John Blaine, yeah, big surprise announcement there. We got a new program that will be starting on Mondays right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. And the way John describes the program to me, apparently it had been previously running on another network right here on Blog Talk Radio, but they would prefer to come over here to Frat House Sports, which I appreciate. And they run a network where they cover, excuse me, all sports, Major League Baseball, NHL, NFL, NBA, you name it, NCAA. Well, sounds a lot like our Frat House Sports program, but maybe with a little bit of a different twist, because John and his co-host will be coming on here every week on a program called Stitches. So look forward to that one on Monday. It'll be coming to you live, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. Before we get out of here, Nick, I want to get into the situation which occurred the other day with Brian Price, the manager for the Cincinnati Reds. And before we start giving our comments on it, I actually have the audio, and I'm going to play it. Now, the audio obviously is censored. And for gosh sakes, folks, it would have to be, because he drops the F-bomb in this 77 times, apparently. But in and around all of the, I guess, bleeps and blurps and what have you, I would encourage folks that are going to hear this, and perhaps maybe you might be hearing it for the first time, I would encourage folks to listen to what his comments were in around it, because that's the conversation I want to end the program with here this evening. But let me play this here real quick. I'm going to play this one, Nick. This runs about 5 minutes or so. So we get a little 5-minute 5-minute breather for a second, which is okay with me with my voice. But this was the Cincinnati Reds manager on Monday with the media. I think it might have been pregame, actually. I think this might have been pregame. It was either pregame. If it wasn't pregame, it was postgame. But this was the manager of the Cincinnati Reds, Brian Price, with the media.
Anything on Devin right now that you can update us with?
Well, obviously he's not here.
Right.
Broke that story last night, apparently. He's home for family reasons, and he will not return until tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you.
So you expect him back tomorrow?
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
I don't understand what the importance is for everybody to know if we have a player that's not here. We don't benefit at all from the other teams knowing that we don't have a player. It does. You don't have to be a Reds fan, but it doesn't help us if our opponents know who's here and who isn't. That's what I want to know.
Well, as a fan, I'm wondering. Well, here's a spot for Devin Mesoraco. Why isn't he here?
Where was the spot?
It's a pinch hitter. I mean, he's an all-star with 25 home runs last year. He hits. I know you. I asked if it was a left-handed bat. You said no.
I don't get it. It's. You know, look. I don't need you guys to be fans of the Reds. I just need to know that if there's something that we want to keep here, that it stays here. We don't need to know that Tucker Barnhart's in the f***ing airport when we haven't spoken to Kyle Skipworth. I think we owe that kid the right to be called and told that he's going to be sent down, as opposed to reading that Tucker Barnhart's on his way in from Louisville. I don't get it. I don't get why it's got to be this way. Has it always been this way, where we just tell everybody everything? So every opponent that we have has to know exactly what we have, which relievers are available, which guys are here and which guys aren't here, when they can play, what they can do. It's nobody business. It's certainly not the opponent's business. We've got to deal with this bullshit. I'd like to talk, and I have spoken as candidly as I can with you people. If that's not good enough, I won't say a fucking thing. I'll go yes sir, no sir, and I can do that. But I've been as candid as I can be about this team and our players, and we got to deal with this. Every team that we play has to know every guy that's here and what they can and can't do. Me. Disgrace. I'm sick of this. It's hard enough to win here to have every opponent know exactly what the we bring to the table every day. I don't like it. That's what I'm saying. Make it very clear. I don't like the way that this is going at all. I don't like it. I don't think you guys need to know everything. And I certainly don't think that you need to see something and tweet it out there and make it a world event. How the f*** do we benefit from them knowing that we don't have Devin Mesoraco? How do we benefit from that? They benefit from it. I just want to know how we benefit from these people knowing that we don't have a player here. Can you answer that? How is that good for the Reds?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's making my job harder.
Sure it is.
Well, thank you. I just don't know if that's what we're supposed to do. Are we supposed to and open up everything here for everybody to know all the time? So that's all I want to know, what your expectations are, because if I got to tell these guys, we got to go out there and they know we don't have Devin Mesoraco, what benefit is that to me as a manager and our team to win a game?
I haven't been there for a week and a half.
I just want an answer on how we benefit from them knowing that Devin Mesoraco isn't here.
I don't think you do, and I don't know that that's my job.
Your job isn't to sniff out every little thing that is about the Reds and put it out there for every other guy to hear. It's not your job. You want me to be candid with you? I've been candid with you. I talk to you guys like men. I tell you what the f*** going on with the team. I tell you how I'm feeling about it as candidly as I can. And then this, you got to watch this. I got to read out on a tweet from our own people in here that we don't have a player? How the f*** does that benefit the Reds? It doesn't benefit us one bit. We try to go out there and win games, I gotta come in here and then you guys blow it all over the place? who we can play, who we can't? I'll tell you what I want you to know. I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't tell you.
Appreciate it. You did not lie to me, and I appreciate
that. I'm up a rope in this business because everyone has to know everything all the time. And that's not my obligation. It's not their obligation. You know why Billy Hamilton didn't play the other day? Because his fingers hurt. He couldn't hit right-handed comfortably. Right? So that's something that I need to know and no one else needs to know. No one else needs to know it. And all of a sudden it's out there. Fingers are sore. It doesn't benefit us. It wasn't from you, but it doesn't benefit us one bit to announce to the other teams that were playing to bring in lefties whenever they need to get Billy out. It's no benefit. So I'll be honest with you. I'm sick of this. I'm sick of listening to this shit. I'm sick of the second guessing. You guys can do whatever the you want, but I'll tell you this. I'm not going to tell you everything about this club because you guys are going to go out there and sniff it out anyway. I don't like it one bit. Bend over backwards, be honest and direct with you guys, and you stick it right up my and the team. I'm sick of it. What do you got? If you don't got anything, then get out and I'll do this interview with Marty. If you don't have anything, just get out, please.
Wow. I gotta tell you something. I've heard some in my day, but I don't think any quite like that. You know, when it was first brought up, I didn't actually hear the audio. It actually came out on Monday, and there was another podcast program that I'm affiliated with that sent out the text of it, and I read it. So I hadn't actually heard the intonation and all that, and I said, in my comment, I said, you know, he might have a valid point, except he lost all of his credibility simply because of the number of times he dropped the F-bomb. Suddenly you lose all your credibility. I mean, nobody wants to listen to you because, you know, now it's just, you know, you've just blown it. I mean, it's gone. But I wanted to ask you, Nick, if you could get past all of the... all of the colorful language. Does Brian Price have a point?
No.
Okay, go ahead.
Brian, he asks if it's always been like this, and I mean, no. If you want to go back to like 1930, and you know, Twitter wasn't a thing, and Facebook wasn't a thing, and there wasn't 24/7 coverage on MLB Network and ESPN and Fox Sports and CBS Sports, and you know, 80 other different nationally syndicated sports programs, then yeah, like you get away with some things. But it's not like this is the first year or this is the first time he's dealing with the media trying to intrude and get everything out of the Reds that he can. It almost sounds like he's only been managing for 3 games and didn't realize it was this big of a deal, but it's been longer than that. And the one thing he says was, he says, it's not your job to sniff out everything you can about the Reds and everything and put it out there. And it is his job. I mean, that's what the media is there for. That's what the media has come to. That's the point of being able to tweet to 85,000 followers in a matter of 10 seconds. That's the point of ESPN being able to go live to anywhere in the country. I mean, as a media member, his job is to sniff out everything with the Reds. And if Brian Price doesn't want to tell him, don't tell him. He says he does have a point in saying, how does that benefit us to tell you that Devin Mesoraca is not here, or to tell you that Billy Hamilton can't bat right-handed because his fingers are bothering him? And if I'm Brian Price, I wouldn't want to release that information, but then don't release that information. Don't say anything.
Right, exactly. You
don't
know,
need to put a gun to his head and said, tell me everything you know about this team. They're there trying to do their job, and if you don't want to help them, don't help them. But so what? I mean,
when I first heard the comments, I sat there and I said, well, no, he's right. It doesn't benefit them. It doesn't benefit them at all to give out all this information so the opposition knows it well in advance. But then at the same time, you know, I had to remind myself, oh, wait a minute now, Mike, hold on. You're a trained journalist, broadcaster, communicator. That's what your initial background it is. And when the guys come, I loved it because one reporter says, well, no, I don't think that's my job. You know, it's not my job to cover your butt. Let's get it straight. That's basically what he's saying to the manager. And he's right. It's not. That's not my job. My the job of the journalist, the sports journalist, in who's on the beat covering the Cincinnati Reds, is to be an advocate for the fan, not for the team.
Yes.
Not for the team. So, no, you know, it was a very, very interesting kind of debate that went on there in some respects, once you could carve out the 77 times that, you know, we had to have colorful language thrown in there. Very interesting debate, but in the end, I concur with you absolutely. Although it's easy to, you know, the slippery slope, it's easy to fall prey to that and say, you know, it's the whole Belichick thing. Do what Belichick does. You're right. You say nothing. You say absolutely nothing. You know, in the NHL, it's he's got an upper body or a lower body injury. That's it. Boom. You know, we don't get specific. Yeah, exactly. Before I forget, I want to get into this, and we only have about 3 minutes. So I want to get into this real quick because we started this a couple of weeks ago when the season started, and that is we have a little in-house panel contest going here where each week each one of us picks a series where we think a particular team might win. And if it's an upset, it's an upset, so be it. So far, after just 2 weeks, right now, Nick, you're leading. You have been accurate 2 weeks in a row. You've got a 2-0 record. Sean has a 1-1 record, and Caleb and I are both winless at 0-2 with our picks in the first 2 weeks. And so what I want to do here with a couple of minutes we've got, I want to make sure we get in our Frat House Sports' series streak challenge, and our predicts that you're going to hear here right now will be up over on our Facebook page within the hour once the program has concluded. So you can find them over there on our Frat House Sports Facebook page. Get over to Frat House Sports, leave spaces in between, look for our little purple icon, and give us a like. Now, Nick, before you give us yours, I'll go to Caleb's since he's 0-2. Caleb is projecting or predicting this week. Do I have a drum roll? It's too long. I'm not going to hit the drum roll. Padres. He's got the Padres beating the Dodgers. The Padres will win more games over the Dodgers. Sean, who is 1-1, well, are you ready for this one? He's got the Philadelphia Phils winning in the series over the Braves upcoming. Yeah, I'm choking over that one. No, it's these darn allergies. Gosh, darn it all. Nick, what's your pick for this week?
All right, so before I make my pick, I gotta clarify on the rules here.
Go ahead. Yep.
Four-game series between the White Sox and Kansas City. If it's split 2-2, what happens?
Well, that happened to me last week. That happened to me just last night, as a matter of fact. I picked and a split, and I put it down as a loss for me. Because okay. Really what you're doing is you're picking the winner. So they would have to win 3-1.
Okay. Well, then I'm going to go elsewhere, and I'm going to keep it with an upset just to make it interesting. Mm-hmm. I got Cleveland over Detroit.
Indians over Tigers. Okay, you got it right there. And technically I am picking an upset as well. I'm going to go with the Tampa Bay Rays over the Toronto Blue Jays. So I think all of us have pretty much got upsets there. Nice job. We'll see how that flows, and we will give you an update on that one. Like I said, you can see everybody's picks over on our Frat House Sports Facebook page. Many thanks this evening to Brandon Warren from sports writer for Sports Data LLC, and he had mentioned a bunch of other places, Sports Radar. Type his name into Google. Hopefully you're going to find a whole load of stuff he's writing over there for the Minnesota Twins. And also many thanks to John Blaine, writer for the Inscriber Digital Magazine. Nice job tonight, Nick. Had a lot of fun. A lot of fun here this evening.
I really enjoyed the back and forth Yankees debate between.
Our good buddy Kevin. Yes, many thanks to Kevin for joining us as well, and many thanks to all of you that have been listening in this evening. Make sure you're here with us tomorrow night for our Frat House Sports Show, our flagship program, 189, and we're going to be joined by David Wood from out in Los Angeles. He's a writer for Sports News out in Los Angeles, and we're going to be talking about a lot of Los Angeles stuff, including all kinds of stuff going on with, new stadiums. But there you have it. Thanks very much for listening in. Catch you tomorrow night.